Hello and welcome back to Up the Villa podcast. If you are new to our channel, subscribe, drop this video a like and get involved in everything that we have to discuss on this episode. So there was no football this weekend, the death of our Queen, Queen Elizabeth. It was sad, really sad. You know, I think I grew up, my parents grew up, my grandparents grew up with the Queen, and I think whatever way you want to look at it, it's a sad moment for the country, and it's a moment in history for us all. So I feel really sad about it. It's kind of upset me a little bit because I think when I think of the Queen, I think she is the royal family, in my opinion. She epitomised everything, you know, her character. I think she's someone that you can look up to. And I just think she was great for this country. So I know you want to say a few words as well, Justin.
Yeah, I'll just write a few things down. From a small child growing up in a home that followed the royal family, I've always been a keen royalist. The passing of Queen Elizabeth II this week has deeply moved me and many others. Her devotion to this country and her role is unsurpassed in the history of this land. The dedication that she showed during her long reign since her father passed should be an inspiration to us all, whether you follow the monarchy or not. The royal family have lost their mother, grandmother and great-grandmother, and we have sadly lost our Queen. So may she rest in peace.
Fair play, Justin. Well said indeed. So that's our little tribute to the Queen on this podcast, but there has been some Villa news as well. And some pretty big news, to be fair. Aston Villa have ranked inside the top 20 most valuable football teams on the Forbes list, which, to be fair, it's pretty good, to be fair. I think there's 11 Premier League sides that have ranked in this list, and we are one of six who are currently debt-free. So it's a massive thing for the club to be in. So if we have a little look at the list at the minute, so we've got in first place, you've got Real Madrid, Barcelona, I mean, what, nothing to be said about them, Manchester United, Liverpool, Bayern Munich, Manchester City, Paris Saint-Germain, Chelsea, Juventus and Tottenham play at the top 10. Aston Villa are in 20th place with a value of 750 million. And we have an operating income of £12 million. So I just think it's massive that Villa have been able to get inside that top 20, to be fair. So, Justin, what do you make of it?
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of way to judge your club, isn't it, and how they're doing at the moment. To be within the top 20 of sort of world football is obviously a big achievement for us, and it shows. Well, you know, football is money, isn't it? And money is football nowadays. So you have to have that that income, and it shows that we're building it now. And I think to be within that very prestigious list in that prestigious, you know, Forbes way, pushes our name out there a little bit more, doesn't it? Gives us that little bit more gravitas, I suppose, within world football. Interesting, the few teams that are just above us, you know, the likes of Everton and Leeds is the surprising one for me. It just shows they are a big football club, doesn't it, Leeds? And they've got big aspirations, I suppose, like we have at the moment. And it's important now we build on it. You know, we don't want to really be resting on our laurels. And I know we've had a bit of a dodgy start to the season, but to even think about getting anywhere near the top four, you know, our income has to surpass what it even is now. So that's obviously buys into the stadium. Redevelopment and the corporate side of things and bringing in more money, sponsorship and everything. So, yeah, I think it's a good thing. It's not the be-all and end-all, but it shows that we're going in the right direction. And as a football club, we are starting to somehow claw our way back to where we were not that long ago. Well, I suppose not that long ago, probably 20 or 30 years ago. But to me, it doesn't feel that long ago.
No, it doesn't. And other news, we're on the lookout for a new scout. So
I'll do it.
Well, to be fair, I did a little bit of transfer up. Does that count?
You've got a good CV now.
So basically, they've said that they're relentless in our desire to compile and analyse as much relevant information about prospective transfer targets as possible, with the aim of supporting the club to achieve its overarching objectives. It also just goes on to what you've got to be able to do to get to be a scout. And, you know, you've got to be able to just, at the drop of a whatever, just head over to a certain country and start looking at players. But, you know, it doesn't just fall on Johan Lang to sign these players. You know, it's a team of people that are there to scout and look at it. So do you sense that if they are looking for a new senior scout, Justin, that we're trying to go into a different direction?
Not necessarily. I think it just shows that the network they're trying to build, they're constantly looking to improve it and make sure they stay at the cutting edge and at the forefront of what is essentially probably the most important part of a football club, isn't it? Is recruitment. I mean, we all want to find those gems out there that you can bring in for next to nothing and they develop into world-class footballers. But, you know, there's how many football clubs in the world trying to do that, not just in this country. You know, you could probably say the top two divisions in this country have got really good, deep scouting networks, if not just in this country, but all over the world. And then you add into that the probably the next 6, 7, or 8 major leagues in Europe, and then you expand that into the world. Everybody's looking for the players, aren't they? The players to bring in. So it just marries alongside the way that the owners are running the club, in that they don't just look at the first team and trying to buy top players to go straight into that first team. You're looking at every aspect and you're trying to, every single minuscule detail you're trying to cover with the best possible people you can find to do that, to do each of the jobs. And recruitment for me is probably one of the most important roles at the club. So it's going to be very interesting to see who they bring in to do that job. It's a job, anybody that loves football would love that job, wouldn't they? You get paid to go all over the world watching games and reporting back. Obviously, you've got to have a keen eye for a player. I would think you've got to have a pretty decent track record of doing that wherever you've been before. So it's interesting to see what kind of people they will be looking at and will apply for that role. But it will be a pretty sought after job. So, and hopefully it will improve our recruitment even more.
Yeah, and this ties in with sort of like getting someone in now ready for the January transfer window. I know a lot of fans were pretty disappointed with our window, and I think what did we give it a 5? I think we rated it a 5.
Yeah, 5 or 6, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so it did feel a little bit I'm not going to say the word flat, but just underwhelming. That's what I would say. It was just I just felt towards the end, it just drifted off a little bit, where we had that really good start to the window. And then, you know, I was looking at teams like West Ham, and, you know, I'm looking at teams like Brighton, where they sell Bissouma, they sell Cucurella, and they've still got a fantastic side. And I know that's was half to do with Potter and his coaching and everything like that. But I do tend to sometimes, we don't get them little savvy boys, do we? Which I think we probably could do with at times. Or just those where we just, I don't know, what's your vibe on it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like I've just said, it's trying to find the diamond in the rough, isn't it? But they're not only very hard to find, but you're basically going out and buying a player that you think is going to develop into a world-class player or a top player. And how can you quantify that? You can watch a player play when he's in his late teens, early 20s, in another league, in another part of the world, and he looks amazing. But take him out of that environment and that team, and put him into an English setting where he doesn't even know where he is for the first few months, and will they flourish? It's there's so many variables that you have to take into account: their character, where they come from, their personality, not only their footballing ability. So it's very, very difficult, which is why most of the top clubs just solely rely on going out and buying the finished article and paying big money for them. But yeah, if you can tap into that market, which Brighton seem to have probably done quite well over the last few years and brought these players in that have just hit the ground running and just increased in value exponentially, really, over the period that Potter's been there. It's great if you can do it, but extremely hard to do that. So, yeah, we've just got to basically try and tap into every single angle that we can. And if we can get a little bit of an advantage over other clubs, then that's even better, isn't it? But it's very difficult.
It is indeed. So, regarding whatever happens on Friday, whether that game goes ahead or not, we have 9 games after the Southampton game. We've got 8 Premier League games. We've got 1 Carabao Cup game against Manchester United. After the 12th of November, we have the World Cup break until the 26th, where we play Liverpool on Boxing Day. So it's come out that Aston Villa in that period are going to be having a training camp. So we've already know that we've got the Peter Whittingham sort of memorial friendly game. We know we've got that fixtures come. I would imagine we're going to have plenty more fixtures through that period, because normally in a season, you have your pre-season, you get in shape, you get your fitness, you get everything up until ready for the season. We've never had a season cut in half for a month and then back to full pelt going into the next part of the season. So certain players for Aston Villa, such as Martinez, Bednarak, Cash, who else would we say we've got? Kamara,
yeah.
Luke Dean. So we'd have those players that look like they're going to be going to the World Cup. Then we have a vast amount of players that would be staying back, training in this training camp. They need to stay match sharp, match readiness. So it's going to be weird, that first game after the World Cup. It's going to feel like we're back to August, isn't it, really? Because for the majority of the Villa squad, they're not going to be playing at the World Cup. So we're going to have to be doing something. So what are you thinking, Justin? How do you think that break's going to work for Villa?
I think, weirdly, after what we went through during the COVID pandemic, which was unprecedented, obviously, I think they'll almost be used to sort of having periods of time without playing over the last 3 or 4 years. That's happened quite a lot, hasn't it? When the games have sort of come to a halt and we've had to wait a few months to start up again. And so it's something I think that they're probably more, this generation currently playing, are probably more used to having longer breaks recently than any other probably generation of football. So I think it's something that won't knock them out of the stride particularly. I think it will help players that may be struggling for a bit of fitness and form to try and, you know, pre-season is the most important part of any football club season, isn't it? Getting going early. So with this sort of enforced break currently through what's happened, and then come back to whenever we do, whether it's this weekend or next weekend, you know, we're not going to play after the international break, so it's going to possibly be another 3 weeks. And then we come back and play a few games, and then we break again for the World Cup. It's important that they keep morale up and they keep the team spirit going, and the fitness obviously is very important, and trying to get a few behind closed doors friendlies, which I think a lot of clubs will be looking to do during that period as well, because it is such a long break. I think it's 6 weeks, isn't it? And obviously the nature of the World Cup is you don't know when your players are going to come back, so everyone will have their fingers crossed that players will come back fit and not injured, because that'll be a bit of a kick in the teeth if we get anybody injured in the World Cup halfway through a season. But it's just a matter of keeping everything ticking over here and waiting for the season to restart again. It already has been a very disjointed start to the season, fixture list-wise. And I feel like with the World Cup stuck right in the middle of it, it was always going to be that way, wasn't it? And if anything, I'd be glad when, you know, almost glad when this season's finished and we can just start fresh and get back to the old sort of way that football used to be. You start and you play all the way through, and then, you know, you just crack on with it. It does feel a very strange season already. So we've just got to make the best of it. This, you know, what happens. We can't do anything about what's happened currently. The World Cup is set in stone, 6 weeks. 5 or 6 weeks, the break. So I'm sure it'll all been discussed and factored in within at the start of the season, and talked about the coaching way, what they're doing. It seems like this break and they're going away on this little coach training camp is going to be great for whoever's staying behind. and just make the best of it, really. You know, use the time productively, and hopefully it's going to give Steven Gerrard that extra bit of time to try and get things going for us and get his way going. And maybe he can take the time to go away and have a rethink. You know, we have been critical of the way he's gone about things this season, although that did seem to have changed during the City game. It is a shame we didn't get to play again straight after, because it would have been interesting to see how he attacked that game. But he's got a few days and weeks off now to try and get us going for whenever we do pull on the shirt again and play again.
Yeah. So it does look like it could potentially be a bit of a long break now until, I think, it's the 3rd of October.
Leeds, is it Leeds away? Is it?
Yeah, so yeah. You know, it's 20-odd days still. So with 6 games in, there's been 2 managers that have had the sack already in Scott Parker and Thomas Tuchel. If I'm being honest, I never saw Tuchel getting sacked, to be fair, because I just look at that record and 100 games, 16 losses out of 100, which is mental. And, you know, a lot of Villa fans wanted Potter, didn't they? But I never really thought Potter would come. I just had a vibe and I never thought he'd come to Villa. But he's gone to Chelsea, which is such a weird thing, because I guess Potter backs himself, which you would, you know, any manager would back themselves, course, yeah, wouldn't they? But going into that environment where you can have plenty of success and still not be good enough, you know. I mean, he won the Champions League, he got them to 2 finals, he lost 16 games in 100. I mean, we lost 17, 18 in one season. Do you know what I mean? So it's a big, big job for Potter, because the expectation is like no other at Chelsea. So how do you see Potter doing there? Because I think it's really intriguing. I think it's intriguing to see how he does, because Brighton, the way they operate is absolutely fantastic, with their recruitment, with the way they operate with their managers, and just the way they operate as a football club is really, really good. So what's your vibe? How do you think he's going to do there?
It's very interesting, isn't it? There's always, it's almost like the sack race, isn't it? The start of the season, who's going to fire the first manager first? And I think, touching on the Parker one first, I think with what he was coming out and saying and how unhappy he seemed to be with the way they were doing it, I think the 9-0 defeat just, I think that did for him, really, didn't it? I don't think the owners were too happy with how he was going about things. But the Tuchel one, it's just very odd. I think Todd Bowley's gone in there with a totally new vision for the club, and he's gone ballistic in the transfer market, spent ridiculous amounts of money, £250 million, is it? And I think he was, by looking at it, I think he was just looking for a reason to get rid of Tuchel. I can't think of any other reason why you would sack him, to be honest. I know they've been a little bit up and down, but they're still not far off the top 4. They've got an amazing squad.
5 points off the top.
Yeah, so, you know, there was always going to be a bit of a, with the amount of players that they've brought in, there was always going to be a bit of a bedding in period. And a manager of his ability, you would think, just give him a few games and he'll sort that out. So I think it can only be that the new owner just didn't fancy him and was waiting for the first excuse he could to get rid of him. Bringing Potter in, for me, I mean, you might play this back in 2 years and say, what a load of rubbish, but I think it's a bad move for Potter, and I think it's a bad move for Chelsea, because the Chelsea fans expect the best. They expect the best managers, the best players, the best of everything. And whilst Potter has done a fantastic job at Brighton, he doesn't fit the top bracket of managers, because he hasn't had that experience at the top. He's never been a Champions League manager, he's never been an international manager. You look at the managers they've had over the last 4 or 5 years, they're all at the top bracket. Ancelotti, you know, Mourinho, the list goes on and on. Tuchel, he won the Champions League for him last season. So you're asking a manager that's never managed at higher than mid-table in the Premier League to come in and basically do what he's done at Brighton, at Chelsea. And yes, he does play really good football, but if he doesn't, how much time is he going to have there? That's the biggest thing. If they don't hit the ground running now, and he's going to be under pressure immediately, and he hasn't never had to manage the level of player that he's got. Not only the level, but the amount of the top players they carry at Chelsea. You've got to balance that, haven't you? You've got to play. You've got two teams basically that you're going to balance up. You've got multiple cup competitions. You expect to get deep in all of them, so your games start racking up as well. Whereas Brighton, if they get through the first few rounds of each cup, then they've done well. But generally, they'll be like us. They'll go out in the first few rounds. Once you get drawn against one of the better clubs, you generally get knocked out. So he's only concentrating on the league. I mean, he's left a club in Brighton that absolutely adore the bloke. They worship the ground he walks on there. And I understand the personal, professional desire to go and manage at the highest level, because it must be a pull like it is for a player when you get linked with a top club. But the amount of players that have gone to top clubs and just disappeared. I mean, you look at Phillips that's gone to Man City. He's gone from a regular and an England player to barely gets a kick at them. So could this be the same thing for a manager to go to a top club and struggle? I don't know. Time will tell, like anything, won't it? You know, he obviously rates himself. He's took his entire coaching staff with him. So he's got to have the support there. And he's given him a long contract. So that's the owner saying to him from day one, you know, you can have time. But an owner saying it and then the fans putting up with maybe an up and down season is two different things. And I doubt it'll be very interesting. It's a very interesting appointment. You don't get many young English coaches that get the chance to manage the one of the top four. So fair play to him for that. And if he can go in there and be successful, then you're looking at a potential future England manager, which wouldn't be a bad thing because the current bloke hasn't got a clue. So that might be good for the country. So we'll see. It's an interesting appointment, but I question it on both sides. I think Potter's took a huge gamble leaving a very comfy job where he's doing fantastic. And if you finish mid-table every year at Brighton and have a good cut run, then you're lauded, aren't you? That I think you're fantastic to a club where he's got to finish in the top four and he's got to go deep in all the competitions and he's got to put silverware on the cabinet within the next probably two seasons as well. So good luck to him.
Cool. Right. So we'll end that one there then. So if there is no Villa this week, we obviously can't do our normal match preview, match reactions, fan cams, predicted lineups. But what we will do is we'll be working on some other content to be coming out as well. So we've had a lot of ideas off you guys when I put that post out the other day. So I'll focus on a couple of those and we'll have those coming out in the meantime as well. So we will have content coming out as well. So thank you for watching. Subscribe to the channel, like this video, get involved in the comments section down below. Justin, do you want to add anything?
No, just, you know, nothing really. I hope everybody's okay and up the Villa, and we'll see you soon. Hopefully be some football to play with in the next couple of weeks.
Up the Villa.